Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello everybody and welcome along to this episode of La Liga Lowdown. I'm your host, Hugh McTeer, and today we're going to dive into all the interesting stories of matchday 31 of the 2019-20 La Liga season, and there were some very interesting stories this midweek. We'll be hearing from experts from across Spain as we go from north to south to east to west. We're going to get stuck into the title race, of course, but that will be a little later on because first, without a doubt, the most heartwarming moment of the round was when we got to see Bruno Soriano return from his 3 years of injury struggle. He hadn't been able to play since May 21st, 2017, but 1,128 days later, he was back as he came on towards the end of Villarreal and Sevilla's 2-2 draw. He was very emotional afterwards, and even if you don't speak Spanish, listen to this post-match interview and to how his voice breaks up with all the emotion of it.
¿Cómo te sientes al volver a jugar 1.128 días después? Enhorabuena.
Bueno, pues imagínate, ¿no? La verdad que no sé muy bien ni qué decir, porque ya tanto tiempo que no jugaba que... Perdón.
What he was saying was that he didn't really know what to say because it had been so long, but the emotion comes through no matter what language you understand. Later, after his interview, when he returned to the dressing room, he was greeted by his teammates, giving him an ovation and cheering his name. This is what that sounded like. It was a very special moment and a very entertaining game. This was the first one of matchday 31 back on Monday, and it was a thrilling back and forth 2-2 draw between two teams with European aspirations. Let's speak to Paco Paula about it. And Paco, was this maybe the most entertaining match we've had so far since the restart?
Yes, definitely one of the best because of the sheer quality displayed in most individual performances. Take both Sevilla goals, for example. The strikes by Escudero and Munir were absolutely superb. Clinical mid-range finishes which were impossible for the keeper. We also saw very good ball passing by both the home and away sides, and overall they looked like strong contenders for ambitious goals, which they're actually striving for. So yeah, I enjoyed it quite a lot.
You mentioned that the two Sevilla goals were impossible for Sergio Asenjo to save, but he did make two really stunning saves during this game. How impressive were they, and how underrated is Asenjo in general?
Even though some pundits claimed Asenjo possibly exaggerated a bit with his flying while making them, I believe both saves were brilliant, especially because of the moment when they were made. Villarreal were dominating in the scoreboard 2-1, and Asenjo first kept his team on top with the first save, and after seeing the game leveled, stopped Sevilla on their tracks from winning the game. After the Calvary, because that's the word, which Asenjo overcame last season with long-term injuries in both his knees, it's really excellent to see him slowly recover his best form.
And then Bruno Soriano, talk us through his return.
37 months, or if you prefer, 1,128 days. That's the time Bruno Soriano has suffered without being able to play football. Everything started with some pain in his knee, which developed into a real issue after undergoing surgery. And since summer 2017, he's tried to return to play without luck. After suffering for 2 years, he again underwent surgery in his patellar tendon in summer 2019, and things finally looked up for him. He worked hard, he was an absolute trooper, and finally set foot in El Madrigal for a few minutes this week. Nothing fancy, but you could see the guy choking and shedding tears in the flash interview post-game. And the way the whole organization welcomed him inside the locker room after the game was truly heartwarming.
What lies ahead now for Bruno Soriano? His current contract runs out at the end of the season, so will he be there next season, and is he expected to play much?
I think he's going to take it easy and play here and there in the remaining games, gearing up for the 2020-2021 season. Bruno is Villarreal's captain and the third example of resilience within their squad, after we've seen Santi Cazorla and Sergio Asenjo overcome career-ending injuries. If Villarreal have waited so long for him, 3 years for him, I don't expect the club to abandon him now that he's back. Hopefully, there's still plenty of football left inside 36-year-old Bruno Soriano.
Thanks, Paco. We move on now to Real Betis and their first match since they sacked Rubi. Curiously, this one was against Rubi's former club, Espanyol, but he wasn't in either dugout for this one. It was Alexis Trujillo in charge of Betis. He's taken over until the end of the season, and he started with a 1-0 win. Mark Bartra getting the header from a corner, and that proven enough for Betis to take the 3 points. That plus an incredible Joel Robles save on Wu Lei late on. Let's find out what the mood is around Betis right now with some snap post-match thoughts from Betis fan and Radio Betis commentator David Whitworth. Here's exactly what he was thinking at full time.
Very relieved tonight indeed. The last 5 minutes I was pacing up and down. But very, very pleased with the image and the change in attitude of the team from tonight. Heart was in my mouth in that last second when Espanyol had that breakaway chance. I thought, oh no, here we go again. Maybe, just maybe, that was a bit of luck that maybe with Rubi that would have gone in. Who knows? But my heart was in my mouth, that was for sure. Luckily, Robles came up with a big save and we deserved to win. Enjoyed the team, not so much, but enjoyed the team in the sense that the spirit and the conviction and the attitude and the organisation was there tonight. Just highly relieved. Highly, highly relieved.
Thanks, David. Let's reflect now on the unluckiest team in all of La Liga, Leganés. After they had their two best forwards, Youssef En-Nesyri and Martin Braithwaite, taken away through the triggering of their release clauses midway through the season, their main striker left is Guido Carrillo, and he's now suffered what looks like a serious injury. He's going to miss several matches. Add to that bad luck the fact that their best player, Oscar Rodriguez, came on for Carrillo in their Monday night 0-0 draw with Granada and then had to go straight back off after just 23 minutes with an injury of his own. And then the other striker at Leganés, Miguel Ángel Guerrero, he missed a penalty in that goalless draw. So just nothing going right for Leganés right now. They're second bottom and 7 points from safety as things stand. Let's speak now to Javier Martín, who's the Leganés reporter for AS newspaper and who's one of the few journalists still able to go to Butarque these past few weeks. Javier, putting it simply, just how big a hole are Leganés stuck in right now?
Situation is really, really tough. Actually, there are players in the squad of Leganés are making numbers and trying to figure out how many points will be necessary to avoid relegation. And some of them, like Rubén Pérez, the other day said that they need like 37, 38 points, what actually would mean like winning 4 of the next 7 games. And I know that that seems impossible, but the thing is that this Leganés is showing First of all, a big problem with goal. They are not scoring goals. Guido Carrillo is injured, so they're going to lose his punch, even though he was not scoring too many goals in the last games, actually in the whole season. And the other day, we saw how bad luck Leganés is having with goals. You know, I mean, they missed one penalty with Guerrero, and they had opportunities, good opportunities and chances, but they were all, you know, not enough to score a goal. And I think that is the biggest problem for Leganés.
You said some of the players think 37 points could do it. That's 12 away from where they are now. How does the fixture list look?
They are having right now some rivals that can be, you know, I mean, suitable to win and to get victories, like Osasuna, like Espanyol, like Eibar. But from the other hand, you have other really, really tough rivals like Athletic, Sevilla, Valencia, or Real Madrid. So I really think that is going to be really difficult, and all the faith of this team is on Oscar. He got a little bit injured in the last game. We don't know if he will be able to travel to Pamplona to play against Osasuna.
Yes, it's a trip to Pamplona next to face Osasuna on Saturday. That's a return to a former club for coach Javier Aguirre. What's the coach's mood right now? He's never been relegated before, but can he stay up this time? And what's his future going to be? Would he stay with Leganés?
Trust me that even when Aguirre is saying and repeating in all his press conferences that he has hope and that he thinks that Leganés will avoid relegation, I think that for him it's going to be the first time that he will lead one team that will fall into the second division with so many difficult circumstances. It's true, with the exit of En-Nesyri, of Brathwaite, but it's a really tough situation, and I don't know if he will continue. But right now, the information that we've got is that it's going to be really difficult he to go on. First of all, because if Leganés is on the second division, he won't probably want to coach the team. And if they remain in the first division, it will be difficult too, because he is not so happy with the project and with the things that he has seen here in Leganés.
Interesting stuff there to get an update from Javier. Thanks for that. As we said, Leganés are going to Osasuna next to an Osasuna side that just shook off any lingering relegation concerns they might have had by winning 1-0 away at Alavés. That 1-0 win came thanks to a really nice Antonio Lato strike, which was the only shot on target in an otherwise very dull game. It was an emotional moment for Lato, and you could see it through the smile after he scored and through his comments after the game. He's had a really, really tough season, starting with a loan to PSV Eindhoven, where Van Bommel simply didn't like him. Van Bommel even publicly said that Lato wasn't good enough, and he played just 1 minute there at PSV in a Europa League qualifying match. So then he looked for a new loan in winter, ending up at Osasuna, but even there he wasn't playing much either. But then he came on for his third Osasuna appearance against Alavés and made all the difference. So that's been another of this midweek's really heartwarming tales. There's much more like that to come in part two of this episode. That's coming up just after this break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome back to this Match Day 31 recap. We touched on the relegation battle at the end of part 1 as we heard from Javier Martin about just how unlucky Leganés have been. Making things even more difficult for them is the fact that so many of the teams are trying to catch in the relegation battle. They did win. Celta Vigo and Eibar remain in 16th and 17th positions respectively, and they both earned huge wins this midweek against big sides of Champions League ambitions. In the case of Celta, they went away to Real Sociedad and won 1-0 thanks to an Iago Aspas penalty, continuing Real Sociedad's free fall since the break. It's been surprisingly poor from them. Then Eibar also won 1-0, doing so against Valencia thanks to an early Jeffrey Condogbia own goal, and then they carried that narrow lead all the way to the end without letting Valencia even have one shot on target. It's not been great from Valencia either since the restart, and that's putting it lightly. Real Valladolid, meanwhile, they even managed to add another point to their collection with a 1-1 draw against Getafe, another Champions League chaser. A first half stoppage time Enes Unal penalty that cancelled out Jaime Mata's strike for Getafe, and then that saw the spoils shared and saw yet another relegation threatened side stand up and take something against a top 4 contender. So after all that, the picture down at the bottom of the table is this: Espanyol remain bottom on 24 points, Leganés second bottom on 25, Real Mallorca third bottom on 26, Eibar in 17th on 32, Celta in 16th on 33, and Real Valladolid in 15th on 34. That's the situation at the bottom. Now, let's move on to the top.
Into a wall named Dani Garcia. Falls through, though, and a golden goal. The wall finally falls, and it's Ivan Rakitic to the rescue.
Rakitic leaves it. Bale and Vinicius getting in the way, and Vinicius with the goal. It's 1-0 to Real Madrid, Vinicius Jr.
Ramos from 25. Oh! His eighth of the season and maybe his best.
Real Madrid and Barcelona remain level on points at the top of the table after they both won their home fixtures this midweek. Barcelona went first and beat Athletic Club 1-0, doing so with a late Ivan Rakitic strike. Real Madrid, they then played Real Mallorca and achieved a 2-0 victory, with Vinicius producing a lovely finish early on and Sergio Ramos curling in a beautiful free kick in the second half. To discuss the title race, let's bring in Roman de Arquer, and let's start off with the Barcelona game. Although they won, they weren't very impressive in my view. As a Barcelona fan, what did you think about the performance against Athletic Club?
It's been in line with Barca's performances since coming back from the break, to be honest. I mean, Barca are lacking a lot of creativity in attack. They're incapable of generating a good amount of dangerous chances, and their moves just seem so predictable. I mean, the defenses are not having a hard time at all stopping Barcelona, and they're depending so much on Leo Messi to generate the attack, and I mean, that's just not possible because Messi has a limit. He's just 33 now, you know, and physically he's not at his peak. And to be honest, overall it was just a very bad game from Barcelona. I just liked the last maybe 15-20 minutes when Riqui Puig and Ansu Fati were on the field.
Athletic basically played a six-man defence at points, and this proved really difficult for Barcelona to break down. How concerning is that, especially because Barcelona still have to play some similarly defensive-minded teams like Atletico Madrid or even Real Valladolid and Alaves before the end of the season?
I think it's Barcelona's main problem at the moment, their inability to break down defences. And we also saw it with Leganés or Sevilla, which maybe aren't as defensively focused as those teams you mentioned. And yet they couldn't find the spaces, they couldn't generate good chances. And it was quite depressing as a Barcelona fan to see your team, you know, passing the ball, passing the ball, passing the ball, but not making the most out of having the ball all the time. So I do think Barca will still continue to struggle in the upcoming games, and I don't know, unless Quique Setién finds solutions, which could be in the bench. We did see Riqui Puig and Ansu Fati providing a different ideas, you know, for a breath of fresh air. That could be helpful, but it's going to be hard in this time left to solve all the problems Barcelona has, but definitely he has to give it a shot and he has to take more risks, not just play Luis Suarez 90 minutes because he's Luis Suarez.
One positive for Barcelona is their own defence. It's 4 clean sheets out of the 4 matches since the restart, and Quique Setién pointed this out in his post-match press conference. What's been the reaction in Catalonia to that comment? Because Barcelona coaches, they don't usually brag about clean sheets.
I think Quique Setién is in a situation in which he'll just brag about anything he can, you know, because it's proving to be harder a task than he probably imagined. He did say that he promised that Barca would play very nice football, blah, blah, blah. But it's not really happening, or it's taking its time, and it's not an easy process. And so I guess right now, with all that pressure, he has any positive he can bring up, or anything that proves that there's a development in the way the team is playing, he's going to make it stand out. But it hasn't really generated controversy here in Barcelona. And of course, fans prefer attacking football and prefer goals to good defense. But I guess in the end, it is a positive, and it's something he can build up on. But of course, there's still a long, long way to go. A lot of things have to be improved if he wants to keep his job the next season, because not winning the title could be very harmful for his aspirations as a Barcelona manager.
Moving on to some controversy, should Messi have been sent off in this game for a stamp on Yeray?
I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised if it had been sent off, to be fair, because we've seen red cards for very similar tackles. But at the same time, I do get the feeling that Messi was kind of looking away as he was landing, and maybe he didn't see where Yeray's leg was at that point.
Yeah, I think it was clearly unintentional, but I guess he could still have gone. Now, as we move on to Real Madrid 2, Real Mallorca 0, there's more controversy. Was there a foul from Dani Carvajal in the build-up to Real Madrid's first goal, the one finished so well by Vinicius?
There's been a lot of controversy with this possible Carvajal foul, and I just think it could have gone either way, you know? If Madrid hadn't scored, I don't think anybody would have been talking at all about that situation. And in my opinion, it wasn't really a foul. I think he charges with a lot of strength against the Mallorca player, but no more than that, you know? He does lift his arm a bit, which can make it look worse than it really is. But honestly, I've seen other much more controversial situations in these past few games since we've come back from the break in Real Madrid games, and this one was probably one of the least controversial ones for me. I think it was fair for the play to go on, and I have no complaints.
I think it probably was a foul, but you can also see why it wasn't given, and since it's not a clear and obvious situation, that's why there was no need to check the VAR monitor. Getting on to the football, what did you think of Real Madrid's new BBVH 4-2-3-1 formation with Bale, Benzema, Vinicius and Hazard all starting together?
I mean, that formation just comes to prove that Real Madrid have an impressive attacking team. So much depth in those forward positions, and it makes sense to try something like this against the weaker side, the team from maybe from the bottom half of the table, where you're not so demanded in defense, because I don't think Zidane would play a similar formation against Atletico Madrid, against Sevilla or Barcelona, for example. And as a Barca fan, I kind of envy all these attacking situations they're capable of generating with these players, because I mean, in every game they create so many good chances that you know that sooner or later they're going to score a goal against you.
As a Barcelona fan, you say you envy what you're seeing. I mean, how worried are you about how well Real Madrid are playing?
Well, to be honest, I'm more worried about Barcelona's poor performances than I am about Real Madrid's good football. If we hadn't dropped those points against Sevilla and we were still league leaders depending on ourselves, then maybe I'd be a bit more worried about Real Madrid, you know, chasing us down and playing so well. But now things are starting to look a bit off at the Camp Nou. And I do think Real Madrid will still drop points because, you know, they've had their ups and downs during their games. And even though they have a lot of attacking potential, they still disconnect sometimes at the back. And they can easily drop points at some stage with so many games after another. But on the other hand, I do think that Barcelona will also drop quite a few points. So it's not looking good for the Cules, and Real Madrid are making the most out of their good performances, no doubt.
Okay, thanks, Roman. Now, in Real Madrid versus Real Mallorca, we had a very special moment in the final few minutes. Lucas Romero came on to make La Liga history, becoming the youngest player to debut in the history of the competition at just 15 years and 219 days of age. To get the lowdown on him, here's our man in Mallorca, Alex Fitzpatrick. Take it away, Alex. Tell us about Lucas Romero.
This kid is incredibly highly rated at Mallorca, as you would expect for a 15-year-old who's just been given his first team debut, the youngest ever player to appear in La Liga. He scored 230 goals in 108 games. That's right, I haven't got those stats the wrong way round. Over two goals per game in his matches that he's played in the academy. And he's been there now for 5 years. But Mallorca have not been allowed yet to sign him on professional terms due to his age. And they will be hoping, trusting and praying that he's not snapped up. And I think some of the reason why we're seeing some minutes for him now is, yes, the boy is special, but it's also a bit of a carrot for him to see that he can get performances in the first team with Mallorca. He qualifies for Mexico internationally by birth, Argentina by parentage, and Spain by virtue of having lived here for a period of time, and could still change which country he's going to appear for. But he represented Argentina in the under-15 South American Youth Championships, getting to the final and scoring some goals in that competition as well. And FIFA youth regulations stopped him from joining Barcelona, and he moved to Mallorca instead. So fortune for Mallorca in that sense, but they will hope to keep hold of him. Incredibly high hopes for him here on the island, and a bright appearance against Real Madrid. There may be some more of that to come for him between now and the end of the season. He just might have something important to say in Mallorca's survival bid.
Interesting stuff there, and of course we'll have Alex to keep us up to date on all the latest happenings with Romero in the coming weeks. Let's finish now by discussing one of the best and most informed teams since the restart, Atletico Madrid, who got another victory this midweek, another 1-0, this time against Levante. And let's do this with Nick from the Atletico fans account on Twitter. With 10 points from a possible 12, how impressed have you been by Atletico since the restart?
It has been a very impressive restart from Atletico Madrid. 10 points from 12, obviously. And if you think about it, Arias had an open goal where he could have slotted it in and we would have beaten Bilbao. And then we would have been talking of 12 from 12 points, which would have been truly remarkable from Atleti, especially given that three of those games were away from home, which is, you know, something that we were really struggling with before with a break. I guess part of it has to be down to the circumstances in a way. You know, we have a good squad, I feel, with lots of variety. If you're keeping people like Vitolo on the sub bench for most of the games, and then he's able to come on and do what he did against Valladolid and get that crucial goal, then that's a real benefit. So I think we do benefit from that, maybe compared to a lot of the smaller teams in La Liga. I think also it's in part in large part down to the preparation that the team has gone through. And I know, and I'm often the first to do this, but I often attack the Prof Ortega for overly preparing the players, and then we get lots of injuries. But it seems like he did get it right on this occasion, so kudos to him.
Against Levante, they won 1-0, but could and maybe should have won by several goals, shouldn't they?
Look, I mean, sure, we should have scored more against Levante, and 1-0 was maybe a little bit more stressful than it should have been. But look at Atleti away at Levante. I mean, how many times have we gone out there and then really struggled? So I think the fact that we were able to get the result in and of itself was good. I know I've personally felt very nervous about that game and going into it. So as I always do, flashbacks to 2014, for example. But it also it does highlight the sort of critical issue that Atleti have been suffering for a long time, which is we can create a lot of chances, a lot of offside chances in particular, but we then struggle to turn them into actual goals. And you know that a lot of aspersions being cast on Costa and Morata for this. But the truth of the matter is, you know, sometimes it's just doesn't work out for you. And hopefully that just means that they have a few more goals in their tank, and in the later stages we will be able to enjoy those. And I remain optimistic. I guess I'm kind of getting a bit off tangent here, Ewan, but a lot of people attack Morata and Costa, but when I see them generating a lot of danger, to be honest. Even Costa, who gets a particular hammering on Atleti Twitter sometimes, I feel he does cause a lot of pain. There was a moment in the Levante game where he sort of picks the pocket of the defender and instantly puts João Félix in a really good opportunity, and I don't think that can be sort of sniffed at. And he's one of these players who's going to create those sort of moments, and he has that psychological effect as well, which I think is really, really important as well.
You almost mentioned Marcus Llorente there when talking about the forwards, maybe a bit of a Freudian slip. So can you explain what's going on with him? How is it that he's become such an important attacking player?
Can I explain Llorente? I mean, people are trying to explain it. Some people offer suggestions that it's confidence. I saw an AS article which suggested it's because his bed costs 35,000 euros. I just can't, honestly. I don't think anyone should really try, except maybe Simeone. I saw Simeone had compared him to Raul Garcia, but saying that Llorente has the potential to be a lot greater than Raul Garcia. And I think there is certainly a lot of truth to that. I think perhaps... Okay, I'm going to double down. I know I've said that I shouldn't even try, but this is perhaps it. He was lucky at Anfield, and the timing of Anfield just before lockdown meant that he was running off the biggest high of his career of all time going into lockdown. And that could have been the end of it, but I think it allowed him to fortify it. And he's very, very, very physically in shape, as anyone will admit. And I think he sort of threw himself into lockdown into a sense of, I'm going to become even fitter and even stronger and even quicker. And he really worked very, very hard. And as Cholo Simeone has said countless times, you know, if you believe and you work hard, you can. And I think Llorente is a real example of this. Then whether it gets into a tactical discussion of whether he's betting one position or another, that's a whole other thing. But it's what you see when you look at him play now is the confidence and that the real joy he has. And it's something that you know is contagious. And you can see João Félix sort of absorbing this, and the whole team absorbing this. And I think we're witnessing something really, truly special right now.
Okay, thanks, Nick. And thanks to all the other contributors to this podcast too. That's Paco Pollitt, David Whitworth, Javier Martin, Roman de Arquer, and Alex Fitzpatrick. I've been your host, Jim McTeer. We'll be back on Monday with another episode as the games keep on coming. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, because we'll be covering all the games over the weekend. Enjoy the football, everyone, and thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays.
Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.